Okay. Oh, this is actually my first KITP conference, and it's really a great pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. So today I'll tell you some of our efforts trying to actually engineering correlated physics in two-dimensional Maurice Superlattice. Well, our journey actually started from a study of optical property of transition metal dicocogenide, where we, in the community, have found that in this 2D system, Coulomb interactions are dramatically enhanced. For example, if you look at exciton transition in transition metal dicocogenide, the exciton binding energy are 500 mEV, so it's two orders of magnitude larger than silicon and gallium arsenide. So it tells us basically the screening in this 2D system are very ineffective, so Coulomb interaction can be very strong. So after that, we basically start to think, oh, can we make use of these strong Coulomb interactions to...
Frank, I'm already confused. I mean, screening is not... I mean, the mass goes in also in the exciton, right? I mean,
yes, so it's a combination of mass and screening is ineffective.
By screening, you mean background lattice dielectric constant?
That's right.
So what is the value? I mean, gallium arsenide is 10. What is the value? Sort of saying very large energy.
Okay, so what happens is if you have a 2D system isolated in air, the screening is very ineffective. So the screening really coming from the background dielectric.
Right, the background.
So then that depends on what you put it in. Even in in boron nitride, it will be around 4. So it will be 2.5
times.
You're
getting a factor of 36 right from there. Okay, all right.
Yeah. Okay, so we start to ask, whether we can make use of that to actually engineer strongly correlated phenomena or beyond excitons. So in transport, and we have learned from Alan yesterday one of the most kind of striking example of correlated electron physics is Mott insulator. And in order to get a Mott insulator, basically you want the Coulomb interaction to be much larger than basically the bandwidth of a system. So we start to ask, how can we actually go towards that direction, actually engineer a Coulomb energy that's larger than kinetic energy? So as a simple-minded experimentalist, we try very simple-minded calculations. So we just say, if you have a two-dimensional crystal with a lattice constant around L, or what's the relevant kind of onset potential energy, and what's the relevant kind of bandwidth. So for the onset energy, we can roughly say it's E squared over dielectric constant over kind of the lattice constant. And if you look at the bandwidth, you can estimate that by kinetic energy, basically as the edge of the Brillouin zone. So roughly that's P squared over 2m. And if you plug it into the lattice constant, it's 1 over mE, 1 over L squared. So it becomes very clear that in order to engineer a kind of strong correlation, there's actually a very simple route. You just do the ratio between these two. What you find is proportional to kind of an effective mass and the lattice size. So that tells us as long as you can get large enough effective mass and get large effective lattice size, we can always push it to, strong correlation and get a Mott insulator. Then next step is how big a mass you need and how large a lattice you need. So we do some kind of rough estimate again. So if you use dielectric constant around 4, then we found if you have an effective electron mass of 1, you only need a lattice constant about 1 nanometer. On the other hand, if you have a lattice constant of 10 nanometer, then you only need an effective mass in the order of 0.1 m0. So with 2D kind of heterostructure, it turns out these kind of regime are very easy to access. Actually, there are many, many examples that you can realize this. And one of the key component of that is this idea of Maurice superlattice. So instead of have like well-defined lattice constant defined by atomic scale, or we can either make use of the lattice mismatch or twisted layers that you can get an effective Maurice period that's much larger than lattice kind of atomic size. For example, if you have graphene and boron nitride, even with zero twist, you can get a lattice constant about kind of 15 nanometer. And indeed, the best example is this graphene boron nitride system, where people have already seen a lot of interesting Mori consequences. However, so as you can see, here are the examples where you can kind of see the band opening or emerging mini Dirac point coming from this Mori superlattice. However, in monolayer graphene and boron nitride system, you don't get strong correlation regime, because if you look at the kinetic energy scale or bandwidth, is about 200 mEV. And if you estimate the potential energy, so with L in the order of 15 nanometer, you get about 20 mEV. So kinetic energy is still larger than potential energy. And part of the reason is monolayer graphene is really the worst example if you want to get strong correlation, because the effective mass is zero at the Dirac point. It has a linear dispersion. Then it's quite obvious to us that in order to go strong correlation, basically we need to take the ingredient of Mori superlattices, but at the same time find something that doesn't have terribly small mass. And one example again is transition metal dichondronite. We can easily realize lattice constant in the order of 10 nanometer, either in the hetero bilayers or in the twisted homo bilayers. And the effective mass in the system is reasonable, it's 0.5 electron mass, so you should easily get strong correlation. The other example we thought about is if we want to stick with graphene, then we can go beyond monolayer graphene. Instead, if you go to, say, ABC trilayer graphene, it turns out when you look at the band structure and estimate our kind of effective mass is in the order of 0.1 electron mass. And then if you compare, we can realize our lattice constant of 15 nanometer, again, is kind of already the regime the strong correlation should happen. So we spent quite some time on both systems. It turns out the transition metal dichondronite strong should be even stronger, should have even stronger correlation, but it's rather difficult to make contact. So at least we were not able to make very good electrical transport measurement. We do see very interesting optical manifestation of the Mori superlattice in the kind of in terms of like Mori excitons, but I will not talk about that today. So I will focus on the study of ABC trilayer graphene, where as it is a graphene system, it's very easy to do transport and the material quality can be rather high. Okay, so I will give you basically talk about several aspects of this trilayer graphene boron nitride Mori superlattices in the behavior of multi insulators, and also some kind of transport behavior of the metallic state, and also some signatures of superconductivity. Okay, so let me first introduce the trilayer graphene for people who are not terribly familiar with it. So if you have graphene or graphite, if you just kind of use scotch tape to exfoliate naturally, then they actually have preferred stacking order. So if you have bilayer graphene, it has this AB stacking. When you have trilayer graphene, there are actually two possible stacking order that have almost the same energy. So one is known as ABA, one is known basically as ABC. So the most interesting example is the ABC trilayer graphene, which I will focus on today. So if you look at kind of in a single unit cell, basically there are like six atoms, and these two sitting directly above below each other, and these two also sitting above and below each other. So what happens is this kind of atom hybridize very strongly with each other. So they push each other to basically high energy bonding and anti-bonding state. As a result, you basically are left with two atoms, A1 and B3. Because they don't couple directly with each other, so they actually have degenerate state at zero energy. And also they couple very inefficiently. In order for them to couple through each other, you have to go through kind of three type of bond. So in the simplest kind of only consider nearest neighbor coupling, it turns out to have a dispersion of p cubic. If you consider beyond the nearest neighbor coupling, basically this is the type of band structure that you will see. As you can see, at low energy, it's rather flat. That tells us it has a relatively large effective mass. Another good thing about this trilayer graphing is the zero energy state sitting at two different layers, so they are degenerate if you don't apply a vertical electric field. On the other hand, if you do apply a vertical electric field, you can easily break the degeneracy of these two atoms. So what that happens is actually you can use electric field to easily open up a finite band gap. So you can realize kind of in situ control of the band structure in a very effective way. So experimentally, what we start to do is basically we first want to identify the different stacking order of like trilayer graphing and kind of a focus to pick up the ABC trilayers. And for that, in order to do that, we use kind of a near-field infrared spectroscopy that allows us to probe basically the infrared responses with nanometer spatial resolution. So when we scan it around, we basically can see like if you exfoliate a trilayer graphene, so this is basically a trilayer region. Topography basically looks very flat, but use the kind of near-field infrared response, you can see this trilayer and that trilayer actually has very different optical responses, and that allows us to easily visualize basically the ABC domains. What we then do is basically actually cut off this ABC domain and make devices out of it. So this is an example where you basically have an ABC device and a kind of a lease next to it. And we also design it in the sense basically we can have both top and bottom gate, which allow us to change both the vertical electric field as well as carrier doping the system independently. So once we make this type of device, we can first see what happens in the transport. So if we don't apply a kind of a vertical electric field, this is a kind of estimate, a calculated basically band structure in this trilayer graphing system. So what you found first is there is a fairly large electron hole asymmetry. But if you look at this, basically the first hole mini band, the bandwidth is in the order of 20 mEV. And as I mentioned, the Coulomb energy in the system, E squared over like epsilon times L, is also about 20 mEV. You can see that indeed we are getting into the regime. The band is flat enough that the potential energy and the bandwidth start to kind of compete with each other. So now if we look at the transport in this system.
Sorry to stop you.
Yes.
Maybe I'm estimating it wrong. It looks like the bandwidth is much more like 40 MeV. Do we not care about
that? So what I'm saying is if we just start from zero, look at the whole mini band. I mean, now the conduction band and the valence band are touching each other, but if you just look at this part, which I'm...
This is with a moiré created by aligned HBM?
That's right. So this is aligned HBM with graphene. So now if we look at the transport behavior, what we see is like, you see well-defined peak at the charge neutral point, and also this full field point. That means you put four electrons or four holes in the band. On the other hand, you already start to see some kind of unusual behavior in the middle. So when you kind of dope the graphene to be close to half field, instead of seeing a lowest resistance, you actually see a bump in terms of resistance already. So now what we can do is actually turn on the vertical electric field, which actually gives us a knob to further modify the band structure. So as I mentioned, if you turn on the vertical electric field, you can open up a finite band gap. So the electron and hole band will not be degenerate anymore. You actually have basically an isolated hole band. And because the band gap opening, you can think that effectively basically are squeezing the width of the valence band. Now if you estimate the bandwidth over here, it becomes more like 30 mEV. So now the bandwidth actually are significantly smaller than potential energy. So correlation effect should become even stronger. And indeed, when we look at the transport behavior, we now see very well developed peaks at half filling. So that corresponds to one electron per lattice site, as well as one half filling, that basically two holes in one lattice site. We also found some interesting or somewhat unusual behavior in the sense three-quarter field, or we don't see it. Even the full field point, actually, it seems the resistance is much smaller than this half field. And part of the reason might be like, this band structure are calculated, basically, when the system is charge neutral. If we are already start to feel, basically, two or three electrons or holes inside a band, maybe the Coulomb interaction is actually large enough. The band structure itself might already start to be modifying. So you don't really feel four holes in this band before you start to feel some other band. Yes?
So just a quick question. The feature you define is FFP, which is the full filling point, I guess.
Yes.
Does that peak diminish when you apply displacement field, or is it just not changing?
It turns out it diminished. Oh, okay, so the next slide will be a little bit clearer. So the full field point does change a little bit. So it gets diminished a little bit, but not dramatically. But still, the quarter filling peak actually it becomes, or half, especially half filling peak, can be much stronger than the full filling peak itself. So this basically.
Can you go back to the last figure, please?
Oh, yeah.
So this is extremely interesting and somewhat disturbing, right? So the Coulomb interaction part is working fine. You are seeing very well-defined, let's call them mod gaps, okay, at one quarter and a half. That's good. But the one electron part, the band insulator part is not working at all because you see almost very little gap at full filling, right?
So, okay.
So the part that is working we should accept, but the simplest part, the undergraduate physics part is... You should not accept.
Oh, that's what I'm trying to. Okay, so this is my hand.
Those are just words.
Yeah. So this is my hand waving argument. It may not be correct.
Very interesting.
So what I'm trying to say is like, yes. So in order for the simple picture to work, basically you have to think adding electron don't change the band structure too much. So when you add four electron, the band structure should look exactly the same. Then you will feel this band. But on the other hand, if you have four electron per lattice site where the electron-electron interactions are tens of milli EV, and the gap separation are also tens of milli EV.
But in the regular system that Pablo and Cody presented yesterday, this doesn't seem to happen, right? There also the same argument goes through, and the ratio of kinetic and potential energy there is 500 or 1,000, take your pick, right? I mean,
yeah.
So
I don't
all
know.
I'm saying, look, this is beautiful. I mean, yeah. I'm just posing the puzzle. I mean, yeah. It cannot be that simple.
It seems every system is somewhat different.
Right?
Sorry, just confirm one thing. I probably asked you this before. I mean, that red single band, it's a topological trivial band, is that right?
This specific one is topological trivial based on calculations.
Calculation.
Yes.
Okay.
So from the both sides of BN are aligned for one side?
Oh, we are assuming only one side of BN is aligned. And that's kind of consistent with our experimental observation that the electric field along one direction give you a much larger effect than the electric field on the other direction.
Sorry, thanks. Yeah. Can you go back to the previous?
Yeah.
The previous one, zero, the calculation for zero.
Yeah.
So where is charge neutrality here?
This is charge neutral point. So that's basically here.
So when you apply displacement field, that thing gaps out.
It should gap out, that's right.
So charge neutrality peak should
be much stronger.
Because it seems to be continuation.
Yeah.
Once become isolated, so...
Okay, so here is basically... Oh, maybe this 2D plot tells you more. Like, so basically, this shows change both the top and bottom gate voltage. So in this direction, basically, we have a change of the vertical electric field. And in that direction, basically, we are changing the doping. So if you look at the charge neutral point, actually, when you apply a vertical electric field, the resistance is indeed increasing. But it doesn't increase as fast as basically the half filling point. So if you plot them together, you actually find that this resistance can be even larger than the half filling, I mean the charge neutral peak.
Is it not monotonic, the one half? I see it increases.
That's right. So it's another interesting thing. I mean, so the resistance doesn't increase monotonically, but so it turns out it will peak about with a kind of a vertical field. Displacement field in the order of 0.4 watt per nanometer. And that actually is somewhat consistent with simple band structure calculation. It turns out, or this picture I'm saying, when you apply field, the bandwidth is squeezed is qualitatively correct. But if you do the careful calculation, it turns out when the field is too large, then due to some other points change, not at the gamma point, the bandwidth actually becomes again a little bit larger again. It turns out that this point does give you somewhat smallest bandwidth, and that gives you the strongest, most insulated peak.
Sorry, yes. you have shown experiments at 1.4 Kelvin that have to measure temperature dependence?
Oh, later I will show temperature dependence. So these are basically just at 1.4, 1.5 Kelvin data. So we think in particular the quarter filling where you have one whole Pallady site maybe more insulated state. So a natural question to ask is what are these kind of half filling and quarter filling insulating peaks? We still don't know the answer, but I will just show you some data about how they change with magnetic field, and hopefully that can give you some clue and you can tell us what might be going on. So if we apply a vertical magnetic field, this is how the kind of IXX basically changes. For electron side, we see the bandwidth is relatively large. It seems it's kind of the correlation effect is negligible. You actually see very nice Hofstadter butterfly and Landau Fan diagram and so on and so forth. On the whole side, basically you see this multi-insulator state for quarter and half filling, and if you we don't see any Shubnikov de Haas oscillation basically in this region where it's very strong correlated. We do see when you apply a vertical field, both quarter and half filling basically get suppressed when you have large field. And the half filling sometimes show this reentrance behavior. It kind of gets suppressed and get increased a little bit. So this is of course very complicated because vertical field couples both to spin and valley. So we then try to do in-plane field dependence. Yes.
So for the band at full filling, the magnetic field does not make it more insulating. It's a little bit. See.
Yeah.
White,
so
but then it becomes blue. At full filling.
You mean this?
There.
Yeah. That's right.
Do you understand the behavior there with magnetic field?
We don't.
I expect it to be just more insulating.
I actually don't know what to expect when there are strong electron-electron interactions, but this is, I don't understand it. Yeah, we don't understand it.
But it's probably just, as you were saying before, it's overlapping bands.
Okay, right? Yeah, maybe when the field becomes large.
How many devices are we talking about when you reproduce this basic phenomenology?
Oh, I mean, for this, we have about two devices. They are similar.
Even in this respect of full filling not being a good insulator?
Yes.
Yeah. And half filling and quarter filling be much better insulators.
Yeah. So then we do some in-plane magnetic field dependence. So on the left-hand side, basically, we actually went to Tallahassee, tried to have high in-plane magnetic field. What you see is when we apply large enough vertical electric field where the quarter filling and half filling insulator states are well-defined, seems they have relatively weak dependence on in-plane magnetic field. You can see they basically persist all the way to 30 Tesla. And all 30 Tesla should give you a kind of a, like Zeeman energy of 3.4 milli electron volt or like 30 Kelvin. So we were initially hoping to see a large effect, but as you can see, the effect is relatively small. And here, basically, we just do a line cut, which tells you better information than color plot. So there are some magnetic field dependence, but overall the dependence is rather weak, like the resistance only change in the order of like 20% type of thing. So part of the reason we think maybe when the multi-insulator is very, very strongly developed already, maybe the field effect will be kind of relatively weak. So our question to ask is what happens if we actually go to a region where the multi-insulator are kind of marginal? So there are correlations, but not quite a fully developed multi-insulator. In that case, we see much stronger in-plane magnetic field dependence, in particular for the quarter filling state where I show you here. So here we have a vertical electric field about 0.3 watt per nanometer, where initially the state is kind of metallic. And then when you apply a vertical, implant magnetic field, then it will become insulating. So there will be a metal to insulate the transition. But the overall field dependence is rather complicated. It seems like it's increasing, and then it decreases a little bit, and then increase again. And this seems to be not a artifact feature, because then when we change the different vertical electric field, there seems to be a systematic behavior. You can see this also increase and then decrease a little bit, but the threshold field actually is lower. And when we have even higher field, it seems the initial increasing part disappears. So you kind of see this dip move to that side. Okay, so we don't know what's going on. I hope it's telling us something, and I'm hoping the theories might help us to understand what's going on, but this is what we see. The half-filling behavior is very different. The half-filling turns out always have a rather weak in-plane magnetic field dependence in our devices. Okay, so those are data more related to the insulating state. So let's take a closer look at the electrical transport of the metallic state. And here, and we focus on the temperature dependence. So basically here, we show from 1.5 Kelvin to 80 Kelvin how the kind of a resistance change in the system. So as you can see, in very low temperature, this quarter filling and half filling peak are very well defined. But when you go to a higher temperature, basically you see this metallic system resistance increasing, and then the kind of insulating part start to decrease. But let's focus on the metallic part and see how. Yes.
Sorry, what range of temperatures are you looking at?
Oh, sorry. This is 1.5 to 80 Kelvin. So this one is 80 Kelvin. So if we plot the resistance as a function of temperature, we see kind of a rather peculiar behavior. At the low temperature is basically metallic, where the resistance increasing with temperature. But above like 30 to 40 Kelvin, you can see the behavior change direction. It actually becomes more like a or semiconductor-like at higher temperature. So if we take a closer look at these two different regimes, the low temperature part, you can also get a semi kind of linear T dependence. And the slope on one side of the half filling point is 1 kilo ohm per Kelvin, and the other side is about 300 ohm per Kelvin. So on the other hand, when we look at the higher temperature range, what you can see is basically the resistance actually starts to decrease. And our conjecture is this might actually be related to melting of the MOT insulators. So what I'm referring to is like if you look at the transition temperature, basically we're around say 30, 40, 50 Kelvin around here. If we look at the kind of a resistance as a function of temperature, so this curve is where the 40 Kelvin is, and this is basically 50 Kelvin is. So what you can see, this is also the temperature, basically the MOT peak basically disappear, and then the resistance start to basically kind of a go decrease monotonically in that direction.
Frank,
so what? Yes.
What is the temperature dependence for the drop off? The temperature dependence, the linear, the going up, but coming down, is that T square? How is it coming down? Did you fit the coming down?
No, we didn't fit it at all.
Please check if it's 1/T² or not. It doesn't look like semiconductor. It's something different.
Oh yeah, yeah. Right. I'm not saying this is a semi. It's like.
But I think there's information in how it's falling off.
Okay, yes, that's what my main point is. And one way that I think might explain the falling off is like maybe this is like a melting of the MOT insulator. So if you have a MOT insulator, well-defined MOT insulator, let's say if you sit at this point, or initially you think this is the insulator and the doping or the effective Fermi surface will be only this much, right? So doping is relatively low. But when you go to high temperature where the MOT insulator is melted, maybe at the same point, the doping should not be counted from this point, but should count for charge neutral point. So suddenly you have a much larger Fermi surface and much more carriers, and that will lead to a lower resistance. Yes? So
do you have a plot of the temperature dependence of the insulating regime?
I do. I didn't include it here. So I can say what happens is basically it will be here. So it will actually be a little bit lower than this one at high temperature, but it keeps shooting up. So that's how it looks like.
And what kind of temperature dependence? Is it activated?
Or in a relatively narrow range, it's activated. When the temperature is too low, it's not activated anymore. Maybe it's like some short-range hopping.
And what is the activation gap if you use that, you know?
Yeah, so the estimation gap is about like 2 milliev. Like,
so all these curves are away from half-filling and quarter-filling. All these curves that you have there.
Yes, so actually these are labeled here. So these are these 4 points.
Ah, okay.
So it's, yes, away from half-filling.
Are you saying that at high temperature it doesn't matter where you are? It's pretty much the same behavior for all of you.
That's more or less, yeah. So this is basically the high temperature, it seems, is a very broad feature. And it, like quarter filling and half filling are not special at all. Like you don't see any.
On the temperature scale, at the end you go to, it's quite comparable to the bandwidth and the quantum energy.
Is comparable to the gap size. I think if you compare it to the bandwidth, it's still a little bit smaller. Like so, okay. I mean, is 80 Kelvin give you about 8 milliV? Yeah, 7 milliV. So it's a little bit, and then transition happens like 30, 40 Kelvin. So that's more like 3 milliV. So if you compare with bandwidth, it may be still a little bit smaller, but the compared with mod gap is actually rather similar. So the other somewhat interesting point is actually what Senthil told us. So he basically saw the data and say, well, this point looks somewhat unusual in the sense all the curve actually collapse at a single point. So basically that means at that specific point, the resistance doesn't change with temperature. So that's actually one signature of a two-dimensional quantum critical point where you actually have a temperature independent crossing point. But I would like to say this is not a generic feature everywhere. For example, on this side, well, it doesn't really cross that well. So this is our best kind of a crossing point. So this is when we basically go from metal to insulator region by changing the carrier density. So if we we can also get the metal to insulate the transition by fix at, say, half filling, but vary the vertical electric field, where basically when you change the bandwidth, you can also drive it from metal to insulator part. And in that side, we also see a kind of pretty well-defined crossing point. So or we zoom in a little bit and try to see what kind of a scaling behavior that can happen at this crossing point. So for the kind of doping dependence, what we found is it can actually be fit quite nicely with, so basically we fit n to times t to a specific index. So use an index of 2/3, it can fit it quite well, but only in a limited temperature range between about 7 Kelvin to like 18 Kelvin. There are some theory actually predict the type of metal insulator transition can have an index of 2/3. The deviation at high temperature is natural because we expect the mod insulator start to kind of melt and is not well defined. The deviation at low temperature is not so clear to us. I mean, one possibility is when the temperature is low enough in homogeneity and the defect might start to play a role and then the scaling laws start to break down. But in certain range, it works quite well. So we can also look at the metal to insulator transition when we actually vary the vertical electric field. In this case, the index of 2/3 just doesn't work. So it seems the best index we can get is about 0.5. And that works well in the temperature range between 5 to 10 Kelvin. Okay, so those are basically transport behavior.
So if I compare the resistivity after metal insulator transition with, for example, the resistivity quantum HLB square, so how big is that?
This one turns out to be rather close, so it's around 10 kilo ohm.
Okay.
So
it seems to be very
Yeah, yeah. So it's, I mean, it's definitely not at the quantum level exactly. But for most of the transition with doping, it's in the order of like 10 to 20 kilo ohms. So it's in that order. So for the kind of a for the vertical electric field controlled one, the it turns out the crossing point is always smaller. It's more like a few kilo ohm. We don't know what defined that number.
So this is supposed, just for clarification, this is supposed to be a quantum phase transition at zero temperature. Everything should be better at lower temperatures, right?
That's right. Ideally, if you have a perfect sample. So sometimes people say if you have inhomogeneity that starts to kind of start to play into the length and time scale, that might start to modify things. And that's my hand waving of saying why it doesn't work at low temperature. We don't know. Certainly, we do not see it work very well at very low temperature.
I mean, you have a factor of 2 in temperature, right? I do not know what very low, very high is. When scaling is over a factor of 2, anybody who does any critical phenomenon would say, okay, it's good for an experimental paper, but I don't know what it means. I mean, you take any measured quantity, if you're willing to scale within factor of 2, it will scale. I mean, we can take
any... I agree. I mean, so the range...
One should be very careful is all I'm saying, okay? I mean, I don't have an explanation. But I'm just urging caution here, okay?
I completely agree. So this is only a very narrow range. But I do want to say one thing is actually people also try to do similar things for cuprate. And in some of the paper, they also kind of claim they are reasonable scaling. And if you look at their temperature range, it's also a factor too.
Well, yeah.
I mean, so I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying this is what we see.
Has anybody done this for just monolayer graphene or bilayer graphene where you have an insulator and you have some alifume by dokum?
Yeah, there was a discussion that the Gates, right?
I don't know whether people have done it.
Varying degrees of disorder. I'm sure this was done. And that might be the place to look rather than cuprates. That's a very similar system. This is not a very similar system to cuprates.
Okay.
There's plenty of intimate, so you want to
okay, so yeah.
Just the phenomenology, is it the same or is it not the same if it's a single part of the thing?
Okay, is this resistance or resistivity, the previous data?
So that's, well, it's a resistance, but it's a factor of 2 off, so the ratio is 2 to 1. So this should be...
You multiply those numbers by 2.
This should be divided by 2, actually. This one is rho xx. I forgot to change it, this one. Like, okay, so now let's move on. So if we go to lower temperature, so we actually went to David's lab trying to do this measurement. So we do see that when you go below, say, 2 Kelvin, and then for close to quarter filling, and when you have a very large vertical electric field, there is a significant drop of the resistance. And then unfortunately, the resistance doesn't quite go to zero, so we still have a residue resistance in the order of like 200 ohm. So we think it might be because the contact is not quite ideal. The fact that you have a very fast drop of the resistance by more than order of magnitude within, say, 1 Kelvin suggests this might be a superconducting transition.
Does this depend on magnetic field?
Yeah, I will show you later.
Can you explain what the non-ideal contact was that really?
Okay, I don't know. So what might be happening, and this is very hand-waving, like say, for example, if the edge like is not quite superconducting and then you are contacting in some weird way. Okay, so
is the 2-pound resistance very,
these are four,
very much higher than the 4-pound resistance?
Yes, actually, 2-point resistance looks completely different in the sense there is actually a very large peak at the zero bias, and that kind of indicates there might be a tunneling type of behavior actually when you go from the
when you have
contact.
When you have a very resistive 2-point contact, you make a weird thing even in 4-point
measurement. Yeah, so for example, even in some of the twisted bilayer graphene or like in a lot of the monolayer niobium disulfide, although when they are superconducting, but when they do kind of a transport measurement, sometimes it doesn't quite go to zero.
Even if you have 4-probe, if there's a small region in series within your the region that you're probing with 4-probes is a little bit strained or whatever and is not superconducting, will give you a series resistance of some small value. So it's very plausible. I don't think it's, even if it's not the contact, it could be within the device, some small region in series within your four progress region.
Okay. And then basically we, in addition to the R2T dependence, we try to measure the kind of nonlinear behavior between voltage versus current. So what you do see is like kind of at low temperature, there is a kind of a relatively well-defined plateau region. And across and beyond a critical current of 10 to 20 nanoamp basically becomes more like a linear resistance.
So actually, the superconductivity and the mod insulator was actually observed at the same direction of the E field. Is that right?
I will show you later. There will be more. And then, if we do DVDI curve, basically it shows kind of a similar behavior where you see basically the kind of plateau at a low temperature, and when you go to about 1 Kelvin, this kind of largely diminish. And then we can also do magnetic field dependence as being asked. So if we apply a vertical magnetic field, so this is a DVDI plot as a function of like a driving current. Again, you kind of see this plateau behavior very well at like zero magnetic field. And when you go beyond about kind of 0.7 out of plane magnetic field, they kind of get suppressed, and then you kind of see this plateau largely disappear. And of course, when you apply vertical magnetic field, it affects both spin and the value degree of freedom. So it's so good to compare with an in-plane magnetic field. So this is the DVDI curve. Okay. Well, I'm pretty much done. So this is basically an in-plane magnetic field dependence. Again, you can see this kind of a plateau start to disappear when the in-plane magnetic field is in the order of 1 Tesla. But we do see something, we don't understand at all, that is when the kind of a superconductivity type of behavior start to get suppressed, there seems to be a resistance peak at kind of a zero bias. If you know what it might mean, please let me know. We can actually check some phase diagrams, so where the superconducting region is happening, both in terms of doping and in terms of applied vertical electric field. So this is when we just apply a large vertical electric field where the superconductivity will happen. So we found it's mostly around, basically next to the quarter feeding range. So they are kind of two dome-like behavior. And to answer the question about the vertical magnetic electric field dependence, what we found is like if you don't apply a large vertical electric field, the whole system is basically metal. When you apply a vertical electric field to that side, it actually becomes a strong insulator. But it turns out getting to the multi-insulator doesn't really immediately give you superconductivity. So it turns out this point is actually where the multi-insulator resistance is the highest. So it's kind of the best developed multi-insulator. But we don't fully see, we don't see any signature of superconductivity. We actually need to apply even larger electric field where the multi-insulator is still there. But the mod peak actually becomes a little bit smaller, and then the superconductivity region emerge. If we go to the opposite electric field direction, we can also drive the system to kind of multi-insulator type, but that side we don't see any superconductivity-like behavior. Okay, with that I just want to conclude. All this kind of Maurice superlattice plus reasonable mass actually can be a very general route to engineer strong correlation, so you don't need any magic, and it can be applied to almost any 2D semiconductors, so you can think about different 2D semiconductors with different symmetries, like black phosphorus, you can actually even get a or rectangular type of Maurice superlattice rather than a triangle or hexagonal superlattices. And I think that basically provides a very good complementary way to engineer a system, like in twisted bilayer graphing. Last, I would like to thank people who did the work. Guo Rui is the one who actually spearheaded the project. It's a very close collaboration with Yuan Bo's group in Fudan University. And then the superconductivity measurement is actually done in David's lab. and we have a theory from Jail, and we have a lot of discussion from people from at Berkeley, and also with Sensor and Ashwin, and thank you for your attention.